You know, it seems to me that in Thelemic religion, the philosophy of New Aeon, Thelemic religion, if we look at the Book of the Law or number of works by Crowley or Rigardi, that the age of the dying god, the slain god, the Piscean age, you know, the age of bondage and obedience to the church, the king, the state. It was an age of sacrifice and death, really. And so, you know, the age of Pisces, if there's anything to the Thelemic point of view, really has had its day. And it's really time to move on. And Crowley indicates that we are now entering into an age, an aeon, however you want to say it, of what he calls Horus, the crowned and conquering child of the new aeon. And, you know, hopefully it would be an age where creativity and self-reliance and ingenuity, achievement, attainment, the attainment of one's highest purpose, an age where more respect would be given to one's own will, one's own divine will, and on the other hand, much more respect would be given to others as far as their freedom to do whatever it is they choose to do. Which is, you know, there's a big difference here between these two ages, yet we see similarities in the symbols, the names, and the particular figures represented, or the characteristics and traits of those real, imagined, legendary or mythological people, characters, gods, goddesses, symbols of gods. What does the Age of Horus mean to you? I mean, how do you put all these symbologies together? These Christian, Egyptian, Crowleyan symbols, archetypes, whatever they are. How is it that you personally put them into perspective?
Well, I think it's a very complex matrix of symbolism, and I think the essence of the matter is much more important than the symbols per se. Some people do not accept Horus as the symbol of the new Aeon. In fact, a lot of people don't. Some groups felt he's had his run, if you would, and now Set or somebody else is the symbol. I mean, my personal thing is that you have to deal with the symbols that are most resonant with yourself and with your own basic nature. So I prefer the Egyptian, Hebraic, even Chinese and Japanese symbols and rituals than I do the so-called Christian. Now, of course, we have to differentiate Christos from Christian and Yeshua from Christ, and you know, it's a very complex matter, but you know, they all fall into different boxes, and it's important to keep your boxes, you know, separate
Separate.
and not get all confused, because you might have an emotional leaning in one direction or another. You need to know what your emotional leanings are, and be clear about them. Much like I mentioned mine. Mine is much more Egyptian, Hebraic, and as I say, even Chinese and Japanese, Buddhistic. I have no problem with Buddha as a symbol, but I do have problems with some man on, theoretically a cross, some say it was just a post, who's bleeding and dying for mankind. As Nietzsche said, Jesus would have been a very important figure if he ever got over being an adolescent. And assuming that he even existed, but as a person. But the God-man symbolism is very, very old. I mean, there's nothing new about it. It seems that 18% of the population of the world choose, you know, the Christianity as their religion. In terms of mysticism and magic, I think most of them wouldn't have anything to do with either one of those two things, because most of them would tend to regard it as anti-Christian, even though the devil, for an example, is more Christian than it is Judaic or Hebraic, because the devil is only regarded as the so-called accuser and sort of is the right-hand guy of God. And you know, so when I see people invoking the devil in the Western sense of the term rather than the more universal sense of the term, you see them affirming a Christian belief pattern and a Christian way of thinking about things.